Okay, radar, I'll go through this fairly quickly. You've heard quite a lot about it already, but I just thought I'd talk from a just give you an idea of how this was set up, why we set up, what set it up at this point, what's the point of it, why do we take on these difficult challenges of trying to find this, make this big system that works and integrates with everything at all times, for all purposes. Why did we do that? Sometimes we wonder that. okay, so very simply, radar is a research, archive, and digital asset repository. So I've got this title of sort of Mr. Radar. It's the institutional repository for Oxford Brookes. So the story, the backstory to this is a few years ago, we had some meetings with the library and they said, well, we don't have a searchable way of looking at our research. People were phoning up the PR office at our university saying, do you do anything on so-and-so? I want to do a PhD. What have you got? What researchers have you got? So it was a very bad situation that we didn't have what most universities had, which is a keyword search, just type in something and find what research is done by Brookes researchers. So one of the big things, drivers for this was a research archive. So that's the RA part of it. It's the RA, or the RAY of radar. And that was the big driver. At the same time, Richard and the e-learning team were thinking our VLE facilities for sharing resources, they're not great. They're okay, you can just put some files in your file storage area. There wasn't really any sharing, it wasn't catalogued properly, and it really wasn't good enough for what we wanted to do. So wouldn't it be nice if we could find a piece of software that was able to cope with research and teaching materials and share them and link to the VLE and integrate with all the other systems? And thankfully, there's a company called Aquella that makes a piece of software that does all that. So we have a what we call a blended repository of research and teaching materials together. Okay. It allows us to have flexibility in how we describe our resources. So the sort of resources Marion's talking about need to be catalogued differently from research papers for a completely different subject. So this software allows, and we've heavily customized this, but it allows us to have different metadata for each object and link it all together with common things like title, description, and all that sort of thing. So a lot of discussion about how you put it in there and how you find it. The VLE integration is fantastic. So we've got Blackboard CE8. This is radar in there. So course designers can find a resource. This is the one Marion was talking about, the liver. So this is in our teaching collection of resources. And somebody can find that, link to it in their VLE course, and then the students will just click on the link and it'll pop up. They won't know or frankly care where it's coming from, but it's actually coming from the institutional repository. So the point to make is it's integrated to the extent that they don't go to a repository, download it, upload it to another thing. We're trying to get away from that. So they're creating dynamic links to this. Okay? That goes down extremely well with the academic staff. They don't have to log into another system. Little geeky technical thing for anyone who's interested. I mentioned the metadata can be customized. So what we've got here is basic ways of describing items, title, description, creator, type, format. That is all kind of an open standard which can be used across other universities. So other universities will be able to grab some of our open resources. And we also have our own kind of Brooksy type descriptions we can add there. So digital literacies, departments, various other things that are Brooks specific. Does that make sense? So we can catalog them in a way that will allow them to be shared easier, but also the software allows us to add this other stuff. And if necessary, to only show that to Brooks people if they're logging in. That's Dublin Core, yes. What's called Dublin Core. Okay, this is an example of how that looks once you've catalogued something. So these are the sort of average kind of things we have. Creators, some sort of notes about the running times, the URL, the copyright, and the license. So what's in it? What stuff have we got? I mentioned the research archive, so that's the major part of it at the moment, the research. And with the REF coming up, that's incredibly important for the university. Teaching materials. So these are, that's Marion's. That's Marion's. Don't think that's yours as well, is it? No, but it's the example of some of the great, really interactive. That's an animation. That's a QuickTime movie, I think, isn't it? About reflection. These are in the teaching collection, which is staff and students only. So our decision was, instead of jump into OER, first stage with the software was to get a collection of teaching materials that was closed to staff and students, link it to the VLE, and start getting people using them. Any of these, I mean, some of these could be moved into the OER collection, but at the moment this is for staff and students only. So course designers in the VLE can access these materials. And then we thought, well, now we've got something that will allow us to disseminate materials, why don't we put some other stuff in there as well? So we're moving into the open area of discrete collections of objects. So these are photos that have been taken around Brooks since the 1980s, as you can probably gather from some of the haircuts. And these were sitting in a drawer, hundreds of negatives. People were asking about them occasionally, but they could never browse them. So we've instantly got a collection of really nice usable images that are straight away have been used by our alumni department. They've been used by other people in teachings. Just really nice collection of resources. Cartoons, we've got some custom drawn cartoons used for teaching posters around the university. So for example, a tongue-in-cheek images to support an online course in digital literacy. So the really, really charming set of illustrations that have been done in our unit, in the e-learning unit by a graphics designer, that are getting reused in other places and have been used in lots of presentations around Brooks. So these are OER already. They're on a Creative Commons license at the moment. And help materials, we've got a very nice collection of materials to support student use of the VLE. And this is about Turnitin, the plagiarism software. And I'm going to show you this in a second, but this has been linked to from some other universities already, and it's only been out 3 or 4 weeks. So that's another type of material. And Marion mentioned some taster materials for marketing purposes. So this is ticking another box for another use around the university. This is an example of one of Marion's self-contained, nice little self-study unit that the school can actually put in this collection as open resources and give an idea to the prospective student what's going on. Okay. So that's where we are. We've got research, teaching materials, which is staff and students, that's open. And these are all Creative Commons, the last few things I've shown you. So you can see that the ones we're starting to develop, that we're going more and more open. People saying, well, it's just easier to disseminate. We're getting over the barriers of copyright. We're running some copyright training courses for staff, actually, to support this, because we realise that you can't suddenly say to staff, use this, but, you know, well, we'll tell you about copyright, or you'll have to find out about it. We decided we have to have courses running at the same time. So what supports are needed? This is a confused lecturer. And these are the sort of grey clouds that start gathering. Genuine worries, really. I mean, what you're asking me to put some material in this thing. What do I do? I mean, do you want video? Do you want slides or slides with audio? And if so, what sort of technical format is that? Why should a member of staff know the ins and outs of AVI and QuickTime? We've just seen an example. That's a classic example of QuickTime doesn't work. So we've come to the conclusion you need at least two different formats. You need YouTube plus some other format. All those decisions staff need help with. So also mentioned earlier, how to describe my materials. Mary and I had a discussion on Monday about a fantastic fantastic resource, which you described, so you typed it in, and then I sort of added something, didn't I, about includes a interactive quiz or something. Well, yeah.
But it goes back to that thing about what I would describe to a teaching colleague who knows the discipline.
Yeah.
To what I, and it's good to have you because you're not from the discipline. And, you know, if I was browsing this as a prospective, you know, if I wanted to know what this was about.
Absolutely. So it's different audiences. You need different text, really. So, I mean, my contribution to that was I just said, well, why didn't you say includes interactive quiz at the end? Because it was just a sort of phrase that made it more appealing and quickly kind of gave an impression. So this is where marketing could come in as an example of having an input into how you feel the outside world would find that resource more interesting by, you know, editing the actual description. I'll play you this if we can actually get it running on here. So what this is on the Oxford Brookes YouTube channel, and the way it happened was it was the business school realizing their students didn't understand Turnitin for formative assessment. So the business school has chosen to use Turnitin for formative assessment, and the students there was a big gap in their understanding of how to interpret their originality reports. So this is produced by our AV department. It's a lecturer from the business school. It's been up on YouTube about 3 weeks, and it's got 1,200 hits, which is great. So it's a really nice quality video. This was done in front of a green screen. That's an example of just a really nice resource, which we want to do more of. And I'll talk a bit more about the workflow on this, because this highlighted some issues about the workflow and how you get it through the process from start to finish. We started off specifying what we wanted. So it was an e-learning advisor talking to the academic about what did she want to achieve. Was this for business school only? Was it for the whole university? Did she want to do it in a chunk, several chunks, or just one piece? How long? Those sort of issues. Then it was produced, so there's all the technical issues of formats. This was the AV department talking to the academic herself. Delivery, so at this point, my colleague who'd advised originally spoke to me and said, shall we put this on Radar? Then there was issues about the formats, the YouTube. Should it be on our streaming server? Should it be a little flash clip? You know, all those kind of issues. Corporate affairs are our marketing people. So there was issues about if you put it on our YouTube channel, how do you describe it? Do you want it to be for just business school or the whole university? Do you want it on Facebook? Because we've got a Facebook page. So there's all these kind of issues. And then the promotion. So it's putting the word out to learning technologists. Here's this great resource we like. Why don't you link to this? So there's all those kind of stages. Lessons learnt. Resources are presented better if they're agreed conventions. By that, I mean the style, format, ways to link to other resources. So for Marion's resources, we decided that because your taster materials were linked to a course page, there should always be a convention that at the bottom of the resources, you'd have the item, the learning item, and a link to the course page, and it would always say course information. So it's those sort of conventions that have to be agreed with the school, and that may be different for different schools, different types of material. But it just makes it much easier to browse, and to otherwise you're thinking you've got this disparate mass of stuff that is so style kind of style guide as well is useful. Really, really close working between all these people, because if this falls down halfway through, you're not going to get a good result. And this was a good example of the video of we think of a good workflow from start to finish. And it only really worked this time, actually, out of just people knowing who to talk to. There isn't actually a systematic workflow at the moment, and that's what we're working on to put things in place to make sure there is something a bit more systematic. Academic staff need appropriate support on how to specify, produce, and promote these resources. And I've said there, you can disagree with this, but I think the support is mostly technical and pedagogic. So there's lots and lots of technical issues. I think, Laura, you'll probably say that it's one of the biggest challenges is the technology. And that needs to be taken away, that worry needs to be taken away from the academic. It needs to be, options need to be presented, I think, to the academic so they can make the decision, informed decision on what, you know, you can have it here and here. This will look like this, this will look like that. This will have a navigation down the left-hand side students can click on. This will just have a video that opens in a separate window. All those kind of things are really important. And that's what I've just said. There needs to be a structured workflow so staff are guided through the production process. Their hands are held through this process so that when they're walking through this dark forest of formats and copyright and all that, all the like, there's somebody to say, don't worry, it'll be fine. So those are the main lessons. That's me.